a sports genius, a former NFL player, and a millennial bro. This is Mad Radio with Mike Meltzer, Seth Payne, and Paul Gallant.
I don't trust Vegas. I don't think that they know a whole lot about football in general. And I honestly hate all the people that put stock into, let's say, things that RJ Bell and other idiots like that say.
RJ Bell and Vegas are two different entities.
To me, they're the exact same thing to me. Like all the people that set lines. So like, I don't think they know anything.
This is Mad Radio, presented by Allstate Siding and Windows on Houston's sports leader, Sports Radio 610.
We are into the 8 o'clock hour. Texans Titans on Sunday. Pre-game show begins at 9 a.m. with Sean and myself. Steph is on Facebook at 8:30 on Sunday morning as well. Wade Smith Internet
Hour. Oh, that's right. Am I on the promo now?
You are on the promo now.
8:30 on Sunday mornings. I do a Facebook Live. I couldn't believe how many people. I did it at 7:30 this last week. I couldn't believe that there were. It ended up having like 1,500 or 2,000 views or something.
People are excited.
Why are you up that early? We might start doing it remotely for away games. I might start doing it like a diner down in Seabrook or something.
I like that concept.
Jackie Goss's idea.
Joining us now.
I'm afraid, though, that nobody will show up, and then it's going to be me sitting by myself in a diner.
That could be even funnier, though.
Really loudly to like three angry old dudes over in the corner glaring.
They
at
will
me.
Be grouchy too, right?
Yeah. No, those old guys are pretty.
No, they're fun.
They're grouchy about the politics they're talking, but otherwise kind of.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely just a little crusty.
Yeah,
like, crusty is probably a better word. Yeah, I mean, you know, you might be disrupting their diner actually too.
Yeah, exactly.
But they'll love talking about Texans.
Do you ever go to the Bel Air Coffee Shop? Because I think you live over in that. I go there maybe once every 2 or 3 weeks, and I feel like the same exact people are always there.
Oh, it's always the same faces.
Yes.
I mean, and it's the same time, right?
Same
like,
time.
It is precise. You can set a clock by it.
Yes.
Like, who's going to walk in the door at various times? I mean, it's funny because in Bel Air, I mean, that's kind of the place where you go. One, it's cheap.
It's very cheap.
It's very inexpensive.
Yeah, it doesn't seem possible. And like they've got like 1978 prices.
Yeah. And then, well, it might be that they also have 1978 like decor.
Yeah, they just that's how you save money on the prices. That's your
it
value
could
proposition.
Be that they you know they're keeping it old school.
This should be a reality show. Hopefully, LeBron doesn't sue me for bringing this up as a topic. But like, I think if you could find a really entertaining group of older dudes at a coffee shop or a McDonald's or whatever when they sit around and have their political discussions, and
I like it.
That would actually be pretty good. Not like actual genuine. You could have
a hot take show.
Send in suggestions if you guys have it. Your particular morning spot. If you have a particularly energetic and entertaining group of older people that have their Egg McMuffin and coffee and get into it over politics, send it to seth.payne@entercom.com.
But not unbearable. That's the key.
Well, no, maybe unbearable might be better. Yeah.
My ideal spot for that would be Buffalo Grill right around the corner. You guys ever been
also
there?
Also a good spot.
That cinnamon coffee they have is the best.
The problem is, I think
for political discourse here.
Yeah, I think
not cinnamon coffee.
Cinnamon coffee gives you better political opinions.
That's like the banker's meeting spot right there.
Yeah, that's like
the all banking business gets done there. Oh, it's you just walk in there, it's just banker after banker. They're typically working on some type of real estate deal or some type of closing. It's actually pretty fascinating.
And you have a very good chance of seeing Jeff Van Gundy reading his newspaper there.
Love that guy.
God, I love Jeff Van Gundy.
He doesn't. He won't return my calls ever since I called him out for stealing one of my jokes.
He would just
accept that he stole my joke on air and be like, yeah, Seth, it was a good joke.
And then he'd be fine.
Like, he's like ducking me or something. I don't know. Like, I've texted him a few times
go to that Buffalo Grill then, man. You'll find him.
I mean, it seems like every other time I go there, I end up talking to one of our listeners. So a lot of our listeners are there,
which is a good sign based on what Kylie just said. All right, obviously we're doing this, 5 days after the Patriots game. So I'll start with this on a football side. What were your main takeaways from that game that we can apply to the Titans game? Your observations.
So just to kind of recap that before we kind of move on. Deshaun Watson, obviously we've talked at it ad nauseum. That was just not him.
Bad game.
Like, I mean, it was just a bad game. It was an anomaly. I don't expect it again. I mean, even the very first play, right? The read option that he's been doing his entire life. Van Noy, they actually had exactly what they wanted. He should have pulled the ball down and just ran with it. In any other scenario, he would have done that. It's interesting. Maybe there's just been so much talk about keeping him healthy, keeping him that maybe it's kind of seeped into his game because that's just kind of what it appeared, right? He was a little gun shy in every situation. I think that's done with. But we all know how much of a copycat league this is. So I think the number one thing that you're going to see and they struggled with was just these bunch formations, right? These three-man bunch formations and communication in the back end, right? So clearly our safeties are doing a great job and they had an amazing game. But the communication, and sometimes it can get a little bit complicated, whether it's Banjo or Tango, where you're basically inning outing three different receivers in the way they kind of you know, disperse. I think you're going to see a lot of that this week.
And right? Especially because Kevin Johnson was one of the biggest defenders
without question.
But like Kevin Johnson was in there because theoretically he knows more than the guys behind him. And now you've got those guys behind him, whether it's Bottom Mostyn or anybody else that haven't made it as full-time cornerbacks in the NFL.
Without question. So that is going to be tested. You know that because both touchdowns were – the first two touchdowns were – basically, you know, or maybe not first two touchdowns, but two of the three touchdowns.
The second one, touchdowns.
Well, for one, the first one, Kevin Johnson. I mean, everybody else, Jonathan Joseph and the other quarterback, was it Colvin, sorted it out well. Right. Kevin Johnson was just completely caught dead-footed with poor leverage and didn't make a break on the ball. The second touchdown was him just not even understanding that he had
– who he had.
That he had James White in coverage.
Absolutely.
Right?
And so –
which, again, though, but there was backfield – there was motion into the backfield on that play, too. So responsibility shifted beforehand.
Correct. So if I remember that play, it ended up to where it wasn't a wide receiver, right? You're basically you're tangoing three different guys, and both of them were two tight ends and one running back out of the backfield, and trying to sort through who, you know, takes what responsibility. Yeah. So, you know, I think those are concepts that you're going to see just really quickly.
We were texting last night about the pass rush, and I'm kind of in a weird spot where I felt like the defensive effort on Sunday was actually good enough to win, especially against the Patriots. It's just that the offense just did not bring enough to the table. But there's no question, the strength of this football team should be their pass rush. Watt, Merciless, and Clowney. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you kind of feel like maybe with the mix, not just those three guys, but overall in the front seven, like maybe the production is not matching the talent that they have through admittedly one game. Is that a fair thing to say? How would you put
So the way the Patriots handled, you know, as far as just they were just changing up so much of the way they were kind of getting rid of the ball, right? It was really putting the defensive linemen at a disadvantage to really be able to let go and rush the passer. And a good example of this is I think Clowney was cut three out of the first seven plays out there. Right, like,
and they're getting rid of the ball quickly.
They're getting rid of the ball quickly, and then they were quick setting them.
Yep.
They were chipping them. They were doing a lot of things just to not allow him to go one on one against their left tackle. Right, and that's probably what the NFL in general this entire season is going to do, because I don't think there's many people that can go one on one straight up with Clowney and consistently win. Right, so you're gonna change it up. But what I was commenting on is it's just interesting. You have the big three pass rushers. We know they're all talented. They're all great. But sometimes they seem a little out of place, right? It just, you know, I know Whitney Merciless had, you know, 2 years ago had some success in the Patriots game as a changeup rushing the center. But now he's primarily rushing the guard, right? Out of a two-point stance. Like, that's just kind of a – are you really maximizing those three?
Well, and that's where and they're doing some cute things out of it where, okay, yeah, because when you do that, or do you freeze the guard and then Whitney drops off into coverage? I mean, it's good when you pop that in every now and then, but for it to be a staple where JJ's always out on the edge rushing – And that forces Whitney Merciless inside. I don't think you're maximizing the actual talents of the guys on your team as well.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I get what they're doing. I've seen it before. You know, when I played with the Hall of Famer John Randall, that's kind of what they did with him, is they were trying to get one-on-one matchups.
Yeah.
They're trying to get JJ to where he can get, you know, a one-on-one matchup against the right tackle. I get that. I totally understand it. But my question is, if you're just looking at the production of the unit, would you want JJ on the outside and have Whitney on the inside rushing the guard? Or would you rather have Whitney on the outside, opposite of Clowney, and have Watt rushing the guard?
And I think that makes more sense.
And I think part of it, though, too, is just the Patriots matchup and what Belichick's willing and capable of doing. And I think, and including Tom Brady, where with Wade Phillips, wanted to get JJ one-on-one, knew how devastating it was on the inside. So Wade Phillips is going to dog. He's going to send five guys and take the risk on the back end, where I think Romeo appropriately is like, okay, we could put JJ on the inside, but if you want to get him a one-on-one matchup, then you got to have five rushers. And do we really want to do that versus Tom Brady? So I wonder if that'll change a little bit this week and on into the future.
That's a very fair point.
Is dog football lexicon for five blitzers?
Yeah, five. Yes. Because it's not a blitz. A blitz is six rushers. A dog is five.
Okay.
So that's why defense coordinators get upset when they say when they see they blitzed 40% of the snaps. Yep. Like, no, we did not.
No, we did not. Exactly.
We said we dogged a bunch, but we didn't blitz.
I mean, they've never gotten to a point with these three guys, Watt, Merciless, and Clowney, where it's all been functioning and fluid at the exact same time. Because at first it was basically Watt and Merciless, and then Watt got hurt, and then it was, Merciless and Clowney. But we've never had these three guys playing at one time well.
It's
and
crazy.
Maximizing all three of their individual talents.
Because they are incredibly talented. And so it is a challenge. Don't get me wrong. I understand what they're doing. And this is week one. And week one is always a funny week, just working out. But the other thing that was really noticeable is just how many times you saw Clowney getting lined up late, right?
Yeah.
Starting on one side and then running across. And it wasn't like, it didn't look as though they were trying to, have them set the protection one way and get back, and then change it, make them change it again. It was almost like, oh, where am I going to be on this play?
Because he was either lining up by strength of formation or a tight end or a particular tight end or whatever it might be.
And so you kind of saw him scrambling around, everybody's still trying to find their home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I saw.
What I've noticed offensive coordinators do too to Clowney is that Clowney's very aware of crack blocks. And you saw this on the very first play of the game where they send a wide receiver down into a crack position, and it distracts Clowney just enough that the pulling guard can come out and kick him out. And I think that, as much as offensive coordinators can throw wrinkles at him, they like to do that. And especially right now, Clowney's not feeling it all that great.
You have to put indecision into Clowney. Because if he just sees a pulling guard, we all know what's going to happen to that pulling guard. I mean, you might be having to bring in your second round, your second guard.